All right, well, feel free to speak up if something goes awry, but I think it was just whatever that adjustment is for the hymns. It's interesting. Okay, well, we shall get started. This morning we'll return to our studies of the man David with this is our 15th talk. This poor man cried is the title. This poor man cried. It's been a while since I last spoke. I think it was on May 15th because we did some switching around. I think I spoke early that month or something, but I hope you will remember the scene that we had discussed from our last several exhortations based out of 1 Samuel 21. I'll be honest with you, when we studied the studies, of, when we started the studies of David, if you had asked me which chapters I would be spending the most time on, you know, 1 Samuel 17 would have been an obvious yes, but I probably would not have said 1 Samuel 21. But here we are. It's been a good study. So, just very briefly, remember the context of 1 Samuel 21. No longer safe with Samuel or Jonathan, David has fled to the tabernacle at Nob, the city of the priests. Now, in great fear of King Saul, David has lied multiple times to the priest in order to obtain first bread and then inexplicably the sword of Goliath, the very sword that had done the Philistine champion absolutely no good on the battlefield because Yahweh was with David. Yet, as Proverbs 29 so adequately says, the fear of man bringeth a snare. And David had spiraled into increasingly bad decision-making, driven by fear and anxiety. So, with Goliath's sword at his side, David fled to Gath, the Philistine hometown of Goliath. Furthermore, David didn't hide in the shadows, but instead decided to visit the court of the Philistine leader, where in turn the servants quickly and rightly recognized David as the great enemy of the Philistines. Was not this the young man that had slain 10,000s of our people, and now he is just waltzing into our courts? As we stated last time, I am sure that even those Philistines probably thought David was crazy for showing his face there. But let's go return to 1 Samuel 21, 13 through 15. 1 Samuel 21, 13 to 15. And he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gates and let his spittle fall down upon his beard. Then said Achish unto his servants, Lo, ye see this man is mad. Wherefore then have ye brought him to me? Have I need of madmen that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? So we'd like to look at these verses as a springboard. We did look at these verses last time, but we like to use them as a springboard for what we're going to focus on in this exhortation, as I believe that these verses really present a major turning point in the life of the beloved. Realizing his now desperate, self-inflicted situation, David came up with his own means of probable escape by pretending to be a madman. What lengths his decision-making had now driven him to. And yet, this may have been exactly the embarrassing and humbling moment that David needed to realize that lack of faith can lead to madness. Because we believe that at some point in this terrible situation, David came to his senses. David came to his senses and realizing this horrible situation he had put himself and his men in, he turned to Yahweh and was in turn delivered from the king. So, how do we know this? We know because David, inspired by the Spirit, recorded these things for us over in Psalm 34, a psalm that we would like to delve into further. And this will be, we're going to read the whole chapter at this time. But we are going to cover the first half of the chapter this talk and then the second half of the chapter next talk. There's a clear, I would say maybe a split in the theme, so we'll get to that in time. But anyway, I want to read the whole chapter now, including the words right under Psalm 34, where it says it's a psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. I will bless Yahweh at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in Yahweh. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. O magnify Yahweh with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought Yahweh, and he heard me, and he delivered me from all of my fears. They looked unto him and were lightened. Their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and Yahweh heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. The angel of Yahweh encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. O taste and see that Yahweh is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear Yahweh, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of Yahweh. What man is he that desires life and loveth many days that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil, thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of Yahweh are upon the righteous. His ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and Yahweh heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. Yahweh is nigh to them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth them out of him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. Yahweh redeems the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. As we start to review this psalm, we'll start with the heading. The heading notes that this is a psalm of David regarding the incident when he changed his behavior before Abimelech. This, of course, is the same phrase used in 1 Samuel 21:13. If you don't already have that referenced in your margin, so again, 1 Samuel 20:21-13 uses the same phrase when he changed his behavior. There is no doubt that the context of Psalm 34, then, is most certainly 1 Samuel 21. The only bit of minor confusion that is introduced is that, of course, the Philistine king is called Achish in 1 Samuel, and he is called Abimelech in the heading of Psalm 34. However, this should not be a stumbling block for us. It was not unusual for ancient Eastern leaders to have multiple names or titles. Gideon, for example, was also called Jerubbaal. Solomon was called Jedidiah. Those are just two examples. While we cannot say for certain, Abimelech is probably the royal title for the king and not a proper name, whereas Achish would be the man's name. Interestingly, Abimelech means father of a king or father king, more indicative of a title that was handed down through the generations. This title had actually been used by the Canaanites all the way back to the time of Abraham. And just to prove that point, if you look over in Genesis chapter 20, you may remember this just from the top of your memory, but you know, Genesis 20, verse 9, then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us? And what have I offended thee? And so forth. So there's this interaction between Abraham and Abimelech there. And then later on in the life of Isaac, in chapter 26, Genesis chapter 26, verse 9, Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety, she is thy wife, talking about Rebekah. How saidst thou, she is my sister. So there's, again, another interaction between Abimelech and Isaac, likely not the same person, but the same title used by the Canaanite leader. So long story short, this is one of the titles, sort of like Agag. The Amalekites called their leaders Agag, and that title you see throughout. I think you see it back in Numbers, if I remember correctly, and then you see it in the book of 1 Samuel. This title was handed down. And so David, we see, is in the presence of this father king named Achish when he has to feign madness in order to get away. In time, he fled because Yahweh provided a way of escape. And after the ordeal subsided, likely from the cave of Adullam, which is mentioned in 1 Samuel 22, we'll get there in time, David wrote the psalm, which we will be considering this morning. So again, if you want to have another note, it's very likely, and I think we'll see this throughout it as we talk about Psalm 34, it is very much David in part one. Really, it's a self-reflective, but then when we get into the second half of the psalm, it's David when he calls his brethren, his friends, his followers together and says, you know, come ye children, let me teach you of the fear of Yahweh that he had just learned himself. So we see this is a psalm that is composed, we believe, in the cave with the brethren there. And that in 1 Samuel, that's 1 Samuel 22, verse 1. So that is the context of Psalm 34. It is talking about the incident that happened in 1 Samuel 21. It is written at the time frame of 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 and 2. Okay, so let's now take a deeper look at the psalm itself, Psalm 34. Okay, let's look at verses 1 through 3. I will bless Yahweh at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Oh, magnify Yahweh with me, and let us exalt his name together. The first three verses of the psalm show David in an absolutely jubilant mindset. Previously, he had been in great fear, letting anxiety guide his decisions, whereas now he was full of joy in the Almighty. Had his position physically changed? No. He was still an outcast. He was still pursued by King Saul. He was still in hiding, this time in the cave of Adullam. However, his mindset and his thought process had greatly changed as a direct result of his experiences in 1 Samuel 21. So he was still in the exact same situation, but his attitude had completely changed. And we see essentially a brand new David. As I mentioned last time, we would submit to you that these events were a major turning point in his life. He will still have stumbles. He will still fail from time to time, as do we all. But in his wanderings, we will now begin to see David as a great spiritual leader, reliant on Yahweh consistently as his guide and as his God. And so now in Psalm 34, we see David blessing Yahweh, praising him, boasting of him in a way that seems almost contagious. Not content to thank and praise God himself, David encourages his growing band of followers to exalt his name together. Can you not envision him speaking these words unto the people gathered around him in the cave? Remember that David already had a band of men with him through the events of 1 Samuel 21, but from this time and forward, his following would only continue to grow. We'll talk more about this in a future exhortation, but I'd like to just read those verses at the beginning of 1 Samuel 22. They say, David therefore escaped, parted thence, and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And every one that was in distress, and every one that was in debt, and every one that was discontented, gathered themselves over him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. We'll have a lot more to say about that in a future talk. But we see all of those that are discontented with the state of things in Israel that are seeking this spiritual leader. Now, not every single person that came to David was spiritually minded. We think of Joab, for example. But there were many spiritually minded men, the core of which would be his mighty men that were spoken of elsewhere in the books of the Samuel and the Chronicles, or Kings and Chronicles. Can't remember the exact reference. In any case, we see David now with his family and growing band of outcasts saying that praise would be upon his lips. So praise would be upon his lips or be on his mouth. Not too long before, I think this is an interesting contrast. Remember, not too long before, at the end of 1 Samuel 21, what was upon David's lips? It was the spittle that was falling down from David's mouth upon his beard in a show of his madness. That was 1 Samuel 21, I think it's verse 13 there. Yeah, 1 Samuel 21, 13, his spittle falling down his beard. This is what was coming from his mouth in a state of madness. However, now what was coming from David's mouth? Words of praise were being uttered up to Yahweh from the same mouth. And this will be a theme of David throughout his life, and we're going to read through a variety of his writings to show how he continued this theme of what should be coming from his mouth. Psalm chapter 40, verse 3. David says, he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it in fear and shall trust in Yahweh. Psalm 51, verse 15. O Yahweh, open thou my lips, and my mouth shall show forth thy praise. Psalm 63, verse 5. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness. My mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips. Psalm 109, verse 30. I will greatly praise Yahweh with my mouth. I will praise him among the multitude. Psalm 145, verse 21. Psalm 145, 21. My mouth shall speak the praise of Yahweh, and let all flesh bless his holy name forever and ever. So all of these are Psalms of David from throughout his life. He would have his lips full of praise to Yahweh. And speaking of lips, please speak up if the microphone goes dead. Just as it became for David, this too should become a way of life for us. If our mouth is used as a vehicle for blessing, praising, magnifying, exalting, and boasting in the Lord, it will be time spent that our mouths are not lying, as David recently been caught up in, cursing, complaining, murmuring, jesting, gossiping, criticizing. So we all know the dangers of the tongue, and that's recorded in the book of James. We're not going to turn there this morning, but we all know the tongue can no man tame. Let us then use the tongue for good in an effort to avoid the evil. So we know the principles in the scriptures. Think about the parable with the, you know, that house that was swept out, and then in the end it ended up worse than it started. It's not enough to keep out the evil. We must fill ourselves with the good, and that includes in the use of our mouth. So again, the more we have our mouth as a vehicle for blessing, praising, magnifying, exalting, and boasting in the Lord, the less time we'll be spending falling into lying, cursing, complaining, murmuring, jesting, gossiping, criticizing, or boasting in ourselves. Back in Psalm 34, we see an interesting note in the midst of David's jubilant statements about the use of the mouth for praise. In verse 2, it says that the humble shall hear thereof and be glad. The word for humble here in the Hebrew means depressed in mind or circumstances, and it makes us think about those individuals mentioned back in 1 Samuel 22, verse 2, the depressed in mind or circumstances. Though these men were in distress, debt, or discontentment with the state of things in Israel, David believed that they would hear his boasting in Yahweh and be glad. They had no comfort in the world around them, but with the word of God, they now had comfort. Thus, David would encourage them to magnify Yahweh with him. That's what he says in verse 3. Think about this as a conversation. This psalm is a conversation between David and his men. Oh, magnify Yahweh with me, he tells them. Oh, magnify Yahweh with me. He implores them again to exalt, let us exalt his name together. You have seen God work in my life. You have seen how he just delivered all of us. So let us all exalt his name together. Okay, Psalm 34, verse 4. David reflects inwardly. I sought Yahweh, and he heard me, and he delivered me from all my fears. Here, David explains the reason for his great joy as manifest in the previous verses. He had learned by experience that no matter how dark the circumstances, and no matter how we often cause them and get ourselves into trouble, which David had, Yahweh is there to pick us up and guide us on the right path according to his will, if we will but call upon him. Specifically, note what David says here in the latter half of the verse. God delivered me from all my fears. God delivered me from all my fears. Here, David recognizes that the horrible circumstances he had been driven wholly, almost wholly anyway, by his fears. And I want to go back, and I've probably been hammering this point a lot over the last couple of talks, but let's look at verses 10 to 12. I think it's the theme of these verses. 1 Samuel 21, 10 to 12 says, and David arose and fled that day. Why did he flee? For fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said unto him, Is not this David, the king of the land? Do they not sing one to another of him in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? And David laid up these words in his heart and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So, as we've talked about before, fear begets fear. David was not immune to that. Starting with the fear of Saul, David soon was caught up in the fear of Achish, spiraling down into the mindset of a madman that he then acted out. Yet he now recognizes his folly, and the proper placement of fear becomes a theme of this psalm. So let's look at, we've read verse 4, where he said Yahweh delivered him from all his fears. Let's look at three other verses in this psalm, because I do think this is a part of the skeletal framework of the psalm. It's one of the key points. Verse 7, the angel of Yahweh encampeth round about him them that fear him, that fear Yahweh, and delivereth them. Verse 9, O fear Yahweh, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. And verse 11, come ye children, hearken unto me, I will teach you the fear of Yahweh. And when he teaches in the fear of Yahweh, the second half of the chapter, which we'll talk about next time, is his description of what it means to fear Yahweh and keep his commandments. It is the theme of the psalm, is again, the fear, fearing the Lord over the fear of man. So we can look at this series and we see that Yahweh alone can deliver us from our fears. And he does so by means of the Elohim as ministering spirits in the life of the saints. We'll speak of the angels more later. The key, however, is that we rightly place our fears. Remember that while the fear of man brings a snare, Proverbs 29:25, the fear of Yahweh is the beginning of knowledge, Proverbs 1, verse 7. Thus, David emphasizes there is no want to those who fear God in a reverential yet loving fear. David thus says he will teach his band of the depressed in the fear of the Lord. David thus strove to encourage his men in the fundamental truths that we'll look at in a series of other verses. Let's look at Psalm 111, verse 10. Psalm 111, verse 10. The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. His praise endureth forever. Proverbs 9, verse 10. The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. Ecclesiastes 12, 13. Very familiar memory verse. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. This is what David was trying to teach his men. Returning to verse 5, Psalm 34, verse 5. They looked upon unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. Again, David is recording essentially what had happened in this incident. They looked upon unto him and were lightened. Their faces were not ashamed. Notice the change in pronouns here in the verse, as it provides an interesting commentary on the mindset of David's band of men. They too had been caught in the trap, led by their Lord David, but they too had looked unto Yahweh. The word looked means to see or look intently at, regard with pleasure, favor, or care. To see or look intently at, to regard with pleasure, favor, or care. David thus expresses joy that those around him also looked to the Lord and were lightened, meaning to sparkle, be cheerful from the sheen of a stream. To sparkle, be cheerful from the sheen of a stream. So David is reflecting back on what had happened. He had guided, because of the fear of man, he had guided himself and his brethren into this state of madness. But finally, everything had clicked for him. He had called out to Yahweh in his desperate moment, and Yahweh had saved him. But also, the men that were with him had been saved. They too had been in desperation, and they too had followed his example to call upon Yahweh. They looked unto him and were lightened. Again, to sparkle, be cheerful from the sheen of a stream. Just as David had once selected five smooth stones from the babbling brook, now he had with him a band of men who sparkled, due to their own looking upon Yahweh, and their faces, now encouraged by his deliverance, were not ashamed. To that end, it should bring us joy in the truth when we see others turn to God. I didn't have it written down, but you know, I know John wrote about this in one of his epistles. You know, there's no greater joy than to see your children walking in truth. Well, here was David. He wasn't that old, but he was essentially the spiritual elder of the group. And his children, many of which were older than him, so they wasn't certainly not his literal children, but his spiritual children, those are his followers. He was overjoyed that they too, though stuck in the same situation, mainly due to his fault, had also looked to Yahweh for deliverance and had been cheered. They now sparkled and cheered. They were as shining stones. We go back to Psalm 34 now and look at verses 6 and 7, which are obviously, I think all of us would say, these are probably the most well-known verses in the psalm, some of the most well-known verses in the psalms in their entirety. This poor man cried, and Yahweh heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. The angel of Yahweh encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. How often we all have heard these verses referenced in exhortations and Bible classes, and how often each of us may have thought about them personally. Yet have we ever considered them in their context, which is David's plight from 1 Samuel 21. In any event, David here references himself as this poor man. This poor man. The word poor means depressed in mind or circumstances, afflicted, humble, lowly, needy, poor. Depressed in mind or circumstances, afflicted, humble, lowly, needy, poor. This is an accurate description of David at this time. He literally had driven himself to madness of thinking, and as such had played the literal madman. He was brought very low. He was very needy. He was very poor. Yet in his time of trouble, his spiritual awareness was jolted as he cried out to Yahweh, and Yahweh heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. Before moving forward, it's important to note that the words for cried and heard are often found together in Scripture, cried and heard. And I'd like to look at a few other Davidic Psalms where we'll see these two words used together, the two Hebrew words for cried and heard. Let's look back at Psalm 4, verses 1 through 3. And these, I believe, all the ones I'm looking at are Davidic Psalms. Psalm 4, 1 to 3. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. O ye sons of men, how long will you turn my glory to shame? How long will you love vanity and seek after leasing, Selah? But know that Yahweh has set apart him that is godly for himself. Yahweh will hear when I call to him. So those hear and call is the same as cried and heard. Psalm 27, verse 7. Hear, O Yahweh, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. So the words here, hear and cry. Psalm 17, verse 6. I have called upon thee, for thou wilt hear me, O God. Incline thine ear to me and hear my speech. The word called upon is the same as cried, and of course, hear is heard. So called upon and hear. Psalm 18, verse 6. In my distress, I called upon Yahweh and cried unto my God. He heard my voice out of his temple. My cry came before him, even to his ear. So this is called upon and heard. Called upon, heard. All right. So as mentioned throughout all these various Psalms of David, Yahweh did hear the cry of David, a fact that was repeated many times throughout his life, and a point that we should take to heart throughout our own struggles in life. It must be said that not only did Yahweh hear the cry, but delivered David from all of his troubles. Now, I'd like to take this a little bit beyond David and look at some other incidences throughout Scripture where, again, these two words are used together from other faithful ones. Let's look at Judges chapter 10, verse 14. Judges 10, 14. Go and cry to the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you in the time of your tribulation. Now, this is a rebuke here, but we see the words deliver and tribulation. You know, for those who reject God, he will not hear their cry. He will not deliver them in their time of tribulation. But then again, same words, just flipping the context from positive to negative. 1 Samuel 10, 19. Ye have this day rejected your God, who himself saved you out of all of your adversities and your tribulations. And you have said unto him, nay, set a king over us. Now therefore present yourselves before Yahweh by your tribes and by your thousands. So this is Samuel speaking. And again, he is telling them, you have done exactly the opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. The words saved and tribulations are the same word from is cried and heard. Contrast with, let's go to Psalm 138, verse 7. By the way, I made a mistake in my, you didn't catch it already. This poor man cried and Yahweh heard him. Those are the first two words and saved him out of all his troubles. We're actually talking about those two words now, the saved and troubles. So we had the deliver in tribulation in Judges 10, 14, the saved in tribulation in 1 Samuel 10, 19, and now Psalm 138, verse 7. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, thou wilt revive me. Thou shalt stretch forth thy hand against the wrath of mine enemies, and thy right hand shall save me. So again, trouble and save. Yahweh heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. And then finally, we'd like to look at Isaiah chapter 63, verse 9. In all their affliction, he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity, he redeemed them. He bare them and carried them all the days of old. So affliction and saved. This poor man cried, and Yahweh heard him and saved him out of all his troubles, or in this case, saved him out of all his afflictions, speaking about the angelic work with Israel. So we see that both Psalm 34 and other scriptures confirm the fact that Yahweh hears and delivers. Yet how is that typically done? Let's look at verse 7 back in Psalm 34. Psalm 34, verse 7. The angel of the Lord encamps round about them that fear him and delivereth them. This verse confirms that Yahweh's overseeing angels are round about them that fear Yahweh. Note, fear Yahweh, not men like Achish or Saul. And the angels are the vehicles by which God's deliverance is often worked out. As the book of Hebrews confirms, and this was interesting, you know, went through these studies, then we got into our Hebrews Sunday school class over the past month, and we basically took a portion of what we had already prepared for the talk. But anyway, these were two studies come into one for a little bit. The book of Hebrews confirms that the angels are the ministering spirits of Yahweh, his hands, if you will, working out his will in the earth. So back to Hebrews chapter 1 in verses 13 and 14, it says, to which of the angels said he at any time, sit on my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool? Are they not all ministering spirits, do sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? We all know that the angels have other lofty duties, such as working out the Most High's work in the kingdoms of men. However, what should comfort us the most is that amidst all of their great work in the nations, which is a comfort, they are still taking time to minister to Yahweh's prospective saints. We know I talked about this in Sunday school class. I'm going to have a little bit of repetitiveness from Sunday school for a couple of these, but that's all right. Let's go to Daniel Let's look at an example from Daniel chapter 10. And I'm going to read verses 8 through 13 and verse 20. Daniel 10, 8. Therefore, I, Daniel, was left alone, and I saw this great vision. And there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned to me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face to the ground. And behold, a hand touched me, which set me on my knees and on the palms of my hands. He said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee. And thou stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. And he said to me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thy heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. I remained there with the kings of Persia. Verse 20, then said he, Knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? And now I will return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. As previously discussed, in this chapter, we see Gabriel and Michael working behind the scenes with Cyrus, the prince of Persia, in order to ensure Yahweh's will for the nation of Israel was worked out in terms of the restoration of a remnant to the land of Judea, as long promised. However, despite that great ongoing work, when Daniel was in need, the angel came to see and to comfort him. Thus, we can take strength in the fact that as important as the angel's work in the nations is, their greatest work is caring for and guiding Yahweh's saints that one day shall be like them, if faithful. Finally, on this point, note what Gabriel says to Daniel. Fear not, Daniel, in verse 12. We have spoken on this point previously. I just went through a bunch of verses in Sunday school a week or two ago on this. But the words fear not are more commonly spoken by the angels than any other phrase. And I'm going to just remind you, we're not going to look at these verses, but we've seen, you know, back to in the time of the patriarchs, we saw the, you know, fear not, Abraham. In the time of the judges, you know, fear not, Gideon. And in the time of the events surrounding the birth of Christ, the shepherds were told not to fear. Joseph was told not to fear. Mary was told not to fear. Zacharias was told not to fear. At the resurrection of Christ, the women were told not to fear. And Paul was told not to fear as well in his journeys. And I'll just read those references. You may have them from before, but Genesis 21, 17, Genesis 26, 24, Judges 6, 22 and 23, Luke 1, 13, Matthew 1, verse 20, Luke 2, 9 and 10, Matthew 28, 5, Acts 27, 23 and 24. So those are all examples where you can look up and see the angel saying, fear not, fear not, fear not. It has become obvious that, again, we're not going to finish this psalm today, but we are going to discuss the rest of this sort of what I'm calling the first half of the chapter is really David mainly looking inside of himself before he really starts into the second half, which is more of an exhortation to his brethren. There is some back and forth in this half, but the second half really is an exhortation to his brethren and likewise to all. But let's look at these two last verses for the day, Psalm 34, verses 9 and 10. Psalm 34, 9 and 10. O fear Yahweh, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek Yahweh shall not want any good thing. Once again, we see David proclaiming the need to fear Yahweh. This is a reverential fear. And, we think about what David said in another psalm. I think it's Psalm 2 or 3 or 4. It's off the top of my head. I can't remember. But he says, stand in awe and sin not. Stand in awe and sin not. In stark contrast to the fear of Saul and the fear of Achish that David had been illustrating, he had come to realize that he should have feared and revered Yahweh above all else. He should have stood in awe and sinned not. The fear of man brought a snare in an increasingly desperate situation full of needs. Remember his need for bread. than his need for the sword, or at least he thought they were his needs. But what are we told here? There is no want to them that fear him. There is no want to them that fear him. The word want here in the Hebrew means deficiency, hence impoverishment, lack, or need. Deficiency, hence impoverishment, lack, or need. All right. The thought continues in verse 10, that even the young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek Yahweh shall not want any good thing. The word for young lions here is an interesting one. If you don't have a note already, this is the word kephir, K-E-P-H-I-Y-R, which can either be translated, it's two very different translations. One is a village as covered in by walls, or a young lion as covered by a mane. So a village is covered in by walls, or a lion, young lion, covered with a mane. If the Bible actually translates this Hebrew word in both ways, if you look at this Hebrew word, many of the translations do say young lions. One of the examples of the villages is actually from Nehemiah. So let's look over there real quick in Nehemiah 6, verse 2. Nehemiah 6, 2. Sanballat and Geshem sent unto Nehemiah, saying, come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono. So that the word villages there is the same word here as young lions. Let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono, for they thought to do me mischief. So at first it may seem like villages and young lions have nothing to do with each other, but they both come from the same root, meaning to cover. While we cannot be entirely sure in what context David used this word, I think both are, it's possible either one was the case. Think of David in the wilderness of Judea. If the word was used to refer to actual young lions, David and his men likely had the experience of seeing these kings of beasts in the wilderness. We know they did because we know one of David's mighty men, Benaiah, killed a lion in a pit in a snowy day. We know David himself killed a lion when he was a shepherd in the mountains of Israel. So there were great predators. These great predators were in the Holy Land. But even those great predators, the kings of beasts, so to speak, had times of lack. In contrast, Yahweh's followers would not lack. Or perhaps David was actually referring to how he and his followers were now in a cave. And I think this other translation actually does make sense in context here. In the villages, you would expect that the citizens would enjoy a much more stable life than David was enjoying right now. But they would still suffer too through times of lack. We know that periods of famine are found over and over throughout Bible times. However, out in the wilderness as strangers and sojourners, David and his followers would not want any good thing as long as they sought Yahweh. So again, you can look at it either way. The literal young lions do lack and suffer hunger, or the villages do lack and suffer hunger. But here was David out there in the wilderness among the young lions outside the villages, and he knew that Yahweh would provide. This may remind us, of course, of what Jesus says over in Matthew 6. We'll turn over there. Matthew 6, 31 to 34. Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewith shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knows you have need of all these things. We're told elsewhere that you are more valuable than many sparrows. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. This doesn't mean that David was having a mighty feast in the wilderness every day, but it did mean that he was taken care of and his people were taken care of by the Lord through these trials. David concludes this section of the psalm by stating that they that seek Yahweh shall not want any good thing. While this is not the same Hebrew word for want that is used in verse 9, It means similar. It has a similar meaning, excuse me, to want, to fail, to want, or to lessen. Thus, once again, we see that this category of people spoken of by David, those that fear Yahweh, says they will not lack any good thing. Their food, their shelter, their raiment, life, health, and strength are all in Yahweh's hands. They certainly would all have trials. They certainly would all have to deal with the infirmities of life, but they would be taken care of. So who are these people that would not lack? Again, they that seek Yahweh, as David had just done. Remember in verse 4 that David had recalled that his seeking after Yahweh was the key for his deliverance from all of his fears. So his seeking Yahweh was the key of deliverance from all of his fears. Let's look at some other cross-references on this concept. Let's start in 1 Chronicles 16:11. Seek Yahweh in his strength. Seek his face continually. Those are the one, those that follow this instruction are those that will not lack or want. Seek his face continually. Psalm 22, verse 26. My praise shall be of thee. 22:26. The meek shall eat and be satisfied. They shall praise Yahweh that seek him. Your heart shall live forever. Psalm 105, verse 4. Seek Yahweh in his strength. Seek his face forevermore. And finally, on this point, let's look at Isaiah 55. Verse 6 and 7, Isaiah 55, 6 and 7, which is an exhortation to us all. Those that seek the Lord will not want. So what are we to do? Verse 6 and 7, seek ye Yahweh while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to Yahweh, for he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. So, David did seek Yahweh when he could be found. You know, I'm sure David in hindsight would have thought he sought Yahweh too late, which is true, but he did come around and seek Yahweh in his time of trouble. He forsook the way of fearing man that he had been following, and he returned unto the Lord. Over the past few exhortations, then, we have endeavored to show this great turnaround in the life of the man David. Though 1 Samuel 21 is an often overlooked chapter of David's life, it was a turning point. Will he still fail? Yes. Sometimes greatly, in fact. Yet for most of the remaining wanderings in the wilderness, we see a man that is spiritually stronger, seeking Yahweh's guidance and not fearing Saul. It isn't really until chapter 27 that we will see him make another mistake, major mistake again. And will he have failures? Yes. Will he have mistakes? Yes. But overall, we see David very much changed by this incident, especially when it comes to his interactions with Saul in the coming chapters. The Psalm 34 was not just written as inspired words in a vacuum. This psalm, likely composed in the cave of Adullam, was a heartfelt recounting of the events that David had just experienced. The fear of man had indeed brought him into a snare, but the fear of Yahweh was his deliverance. This morning we review the first half of the psalm in which David recounted the lessons of his foray into madness and his salvation therefrom once he sought Yahweh. Indeed, this poor man cried, and Yahweh heard him, saving him out of all of his troubles. Those angels who encamped about him had provided a great deliverance. Once he remembered to fear Yahweh and not man. Remember the comforting words of the angels throughout the Bible. Fear not. Now we have come to a good stopping point in the psalm, because while the first 10 verses were largely introspective, with David recounting his lessons learned, verse 11 will bring a shift in the psalm as David will gather his followers round about him and provide a great exhortation as he says, I will teach you the fear of the Lord. So next time we will gather around as part of David's band and receive this instruction. Thank you.